Hey everyone, welcome to my latest and greatest episode of Ag Uncensored with your host, myself, Nathan Filiti. Today, I got a good old colleague of mine that I bothered last minute as I actually kind of got behind from going to the World Agritech last week. But at the same time, it's been a meaning to do it at some point in time, and it maybe kind of works because another side of this space of ag tech is seeing it from a different lens, not just some of the leaders and whatnot, but definitely people that have a lot of stories. And my guest today, David Swain, has plenty of those things. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
We've been around a day or two, so yeah. We probably know where a lot of the bodies are buried. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, there are some buried bodies, and because Dave's in a little more independent space like myself, and he dabbles in the consulting side too, is it might be a little more uncensored today than maybe others. But before we get to that, Dave, tell the listeners about yourself.
Well, for those that don't know me, Dave Swain, I grew up on a family farm in Southeast Indiana and graduated with an ag econ degree. And when there was really no technology, internet, Al Gore hadn't invented the internet yet. So didn't even have that. So, but worked in retail fertilizer for about 6 years. Before I went to work for Ag Chem Equipment Company and sold Terragators and Rogators for about 2.5 years before I moved into their subsidiary called Soil Tech, grid sampling, variable rate controller, when it was still a novelty back in the 90s. And then went through the buyout when AGCO bought Ag Chem. And through all of that, was still in their technology group. Today, it's known as Fuse Technologies. But became North America marketing manager for that group. In 13, left AGCO, was at AGCO about 20 years. 13 went to Southern States Co-op and ran their precision ag program for about 4 years before needing to move back home to Indiana. And so went to work for a startup called Spensive Technologies. It was an automated insect trap and scouting app and really some cool stuff. Was really excited about it and worked for them for all of about 5 months before we got bought out by DTN. So I became a sales rep for DTN for 4 years before I started my business, Vision Technology Management. And really, in short, really looked at where there was a gap in using technology. Sales organizations, as you well know, Nathan, were... Mm-hmm. You sell it, you train it, you onboard it, you get their tech support over them, you move to the next sale. And a lot of products probably would still be out there because they were good, solid products, but the customers didn't use them like they wanted to, needed to, or got the return on their investments. Yeah. And it just kind of fell off from there. And so what I saw, it didn't matter whether it was products, services, really it was implementation. So I kind of see myself as kind of I'll use a bit of a buzzword, a fractal CTO and CIO for agribusinesses and growers. So being able to look out and see what technologies they might want to use and help them evaluate them, but then also help them implement the technologies they already have so that they get what they expected out of them and then get the return on the investment. So that's the primary what I'm trying to do with my business.
Well, to say the least, you've sowed a few things over time.
Yeah, I've been in the technology space for over 25 years now, so yeah, it's been a day or two.
Yeah, and I mean, I've known you forever, seen you around, and all that. Probably less so when I was way younger, traveling around with the old man. But when you talk about the Rogator and all that, then I think of good old Falcon controllers and trying to get files into those with their special proprietary format. And yep. getting all that. Don't, so maybe
don't forget the floppy disks. Don't forget the floppy disks.
Oh no, can't do that. I don't think even kids know it. My kid will never know what that means until I find a group of them, and even CDs, because I'll jump back, like back in the days, 90s, early 2000s, mainly 90s, we would get imagery from a CD from the Aeros Data Center or from some other private group. And then, you know, I have to bring that, configure it, and then we'd send that CD out to our clients and they would download our software, and then they'd poke it in there, so then it all synced up.
Yep.
And that's how hard imagery used to be, and people still have a freaking problem with it today. Yeah. And it, the same went for prescriptions.
Yes.
And what I have to laugh at, and I think I might have shared this on social media or something, my good old Soil Action brochure.
Yep. You know,
five different products, five different rates. You could do this. What didn't that come out? Yes. Like 99 or something like that?
Oh no. If you go back before Al bought Loral that had the original Soil Tech, the first one I saw was a Loral in 1988, was the first multi-bin Soil Action machine I saw.
Ugh. And how far have we gone today?
I laugh because I when you look at all of this and you look at placement, think about this. We had to have an air spreader because you wanted positive placement. And then all of a sudden we had to have, you know, oh, I don't want to do the maintenance on it. Kind of to your point of, I have to work hard at this. It's too much work. I just want a spinner and it'll throw 90 feet and it'll be just as accurate. Here within the last month, I just saw an article that was talking about questioning whether a spinner spreader was really as accurate as they say it was.
Oh God. You know, we were literally talking about this yesterday when you just, you called me up on some stuff is we're just talking about the same shit over and over. Precision ag, now everyone calls it ag tech. It was site specific farming and all this stuff. And, you know, from, multi bin, multi rate stuff could be done in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Now, and the agronomic side of it, it's really not much different. The machines applying it, how they apply it, is actually not much different. Now, what's different now is getting data faster into the machines and more accurate.
In and out. Yes.
But what's like, everyone's talked about adoption issues in ag tech, and we've seen it. We've seen what's been possible since, you know, to your point, the 80s and 90s. And these tools have been there, and some have been more progressive than others. Yet it still has been just low use of doing it the same way. What's your theory on what's going on there? It can't be just people are, I mean, part of it is people don't want to try new things and they like to do what they do. We're creatures of habit and farming. We're bad at that. Yep. What else is going on?
I'll do the shameless plug. That's why I started my business.
Yeah. No, sure.
I really look at, And it doesn't matter whether it's my business or anything. I've seen it across so many segments of what we're doing. Of the salesman goes in. I mean, and I've been on both sides of the desk, the salesman and the customer. The customer buys with an expectation, and they are excited about what they're getting, what they're going to be able to do with it. They have obstacles they're going to overcome by those tools or services, whatever it is, and they make the purchase, and they're all excited about it. And we can talk about a lot of the different aspects of it. One being, is everybody bought in? You know, you get one or two people in an organization, they get excited and they know what they're going to do with it, but is everybody in on it?
And that's its own problem for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when you look at the true implementation of it, you know, you play with it, you get used to it, you start knowing what you don't know about it. And as a book I read calls it, the whirlwind of the day hits. And all of a sudden, change is not the priority.
Mm-hmm.
The whirlwind, or some days it's a hurricane, hits. And I have to put out the fires of the day. I have to call this customer. I have to call this vendor. I have to call this salesman. I have to call this manager. I just want to get through the day.
Yeah.
And that change loses its priority and keeps moving down the priority list until it becomes a non-issue anymore. And then they drop the product or they keep paying for something they don't use.
Yeah. That's a good, in the nutshell, way. I mean, it reminds me of a few things. From one, the countless times, you know, from early days to even, recently, you try to get this coveted prescription file into something. I don't care what it is. We'll just call it a interrogator. And it's sometimes it's been, oh, we didn't, you put a number in there, you got your rate. Oh, wait, this machine or this goes by actual pounds, not. We skipped a decimal here or something, or it's not in the right whatever, or, you know, some reason the planter's not working. It'll just do a one rate. Screw it. Rain's coming. I got to get it in the ground.
Pounds on the ground, plants in the ground.
Yeah, that's the way it is. And well, it reminds me of a story. I'll have you tell it. Is when maybe this was at when you were at Southern States or some, maybe it was just recently. These you could have these machines that are supposed to apply perfectly, and then if they're not maintained correctly, and they're not actually looked at, whatever you're charging, you might charge a farmer $10 an acre to spread this prescription file that's supposed to do all these magical things, all the things that the 4 R's represent, and putting them in the right place, right time, right rate, all this stuff. But then the group you hire to do it and you pay this money find out that what they're spreading is not what they're spreading. And they have holes in their booms, or it's not calibrated. And there's a fertilizer story here. I know you should tell it because I think it opens the light. I want others to see how simplistic some of the bad problems are. The basics.
It's the basics. Yeah. And it was, I was working for Soil Tech at the time. And so I would work with the Terragator, Rogator salespeople. That would, you know, the customer was still theirs. It was their primary responsibility. And I was there to support them on the technology side. But I had one of the customers and they had multiple multi-bin machines. So two or three soil election machines, plus everything else was variable rate as well. And they had top dressed wheat. And they had done it for years and no problem. Well, 1 year, those conditions were just right. It was just dry enough. But all of a sudden, all of their wheat fields were streaked. And not just a little. I mean, it was fairly significant. So they called me up, what's wrong? So we went out and looked at fields. And I said, okay, I think I know what the problem is. I said, tomorrow morning, because this was getting late. He said, tomorrow morning, I want every machine you have with about 200 pounds of potash and a slab of concrete. The guy kind of looks at me like, what? And I said, 200 pounds of potash and a slab of concrete.
What sort of tomfoolery is this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we get there the next morning. They back the first machine up, put the booms out. And as they're putting the booms out, I start looking at them. Sure enough, I didn't even have to see it, I needed them to see it. But all of those deflectors on that air machine had the grooves, and some of them even had holes out the ends of the deflectors. And it was, I mean, I, one of the tech got the service technicians that have taught me that you just throw some, you know, potash out on the ground. It'll show you every skip and every overlap there ever was. And sure enough, I mean, you wouldn't believe the holes that thing had in it. Yeah. And they were like, what the heck? And I said, how long has it been since you changed the deflectors on this? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, bring the next one. We swept up that batch of potash. The only one that didn't have a problem was the brand new one they had just bought right before the spring. Mm-hmm. And I said, there's your issue. You got to take care of the machine.
Yeah.
And it's those types of things where, and I don't care whether it's equipment maintenance. I don't care if it's the agronomics, solid soil sampling. When it mm-hmm. all comes down to it, if we aren't taking, I mean, I had a guy that worked for me at Southern States brought me back to this reality. He goes, Dave, I love the direction. I love the vision you have for the program. He said, but you know what? If we don't do the basics well, none of this makes any difference.
No, I made a last time we talked besides yesterday is a couple of months ago. I wrote a post and I linked you as like, and that's what we were talking about, getting down to basics. And, you know, even sometimes, you know, from the imagery standpoint that I've, you know, grown up around, especially when all the drone stuff came out, mm-hmm. And then aerial stuff kind of popped up. You know, it's like, oh, we can see down to this plant. We can do all these things. And I would ask him, I was like, well, what are you going to do with it? And, you know, mm-hmm. some would say, well, we'll count the plants. It's like, okay, fine. Whatever.
You're getting stand counts, great.
Yeah, and even then, it's like, okay, by the charge and all that, and time you fly it, you could have just had a guy walk out there and get stand counts, you know.
Yeah.
But I get to it, to some scalability things in certain test environments, whatnot. So I'll give that one a pass. But it'd be like, well, we can now create variable rate maps from it. I'm like, yeah, I could have done that for doing it since the mid-90s, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yeah, a couple, 3, 4, 5, 6 zones, whatever. Go soil test them. It's like, yeah, we'll be more accurate doing it. And I was like, oh, okay. Let me see one of your prescriptions that you've made. And then they'd show me as like, on like a, call it 160 acre field, 80 acre field. Doesn't even matter. I'm like, so you flew this at like 1 centimeter resolution or whatever. And then you de-resolutionized it basically to a 30 meter resolution like you can get for free from a satellite, and it's the same damn thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why? I was like, well, it's more accurate. But even ones that would try to make variable rate maps from like the real fine resolution stuff, there's just so much noise. Mm-hmm. And I would bring up these arguments and it's like it wasn't even thought of, but people were making big decisions with it. Like we were doing a big deal with Pioneer at the time. And then overnight, a new guy came and says, no, we're doing all drones. I was like, you realize we've been doing like millions and millions of acres of data with you. And you're just going to turn it to drones overnight. It's like, fine. I can't convince you otherwise because, you know, we tried. So mm-hmm. I guess you'll find out. And you know the term, and we'll go a little under-censored here. You fuck around, you find out.
Exactly.
And, but it is like, okay, even if you get this super fine resolution and maybe the next step, okay, you find these small little zones and patterns. Okay, for one, are you soil testing those different zones? If the size of that different zone is the size of this room, like 10 feet by 10 feet, mm-hmm. so you're saying you're making a decision on that part separately than the other square over there. Well, no, you're not, because you don't know why there's a difference. You just know there's a difference. Maybe relatively it's the same. Maybe it's not. That's why you're not going to do a 100 zone map, you know, unless mm-hmm. AI and robots getting everything. I was like, okay, say you even get that. Say you've mm-hmm. perfected the high resolution variable rate map. Awesome. Because you got, somehow you got row control, you know, on, mm-hmm. on whatever. And that's what exists. Some
and
of that exists.
And if you're spraying, that's fine.
Yeah. And maybe you got the rates right. But the people that have that from the equipment side is like less than 0.1%. of equipment out there that sprays it to that fine of resolution. Mm-hmm. Your resolution isn't the data. Your resolution is the boom width that you're applying it with.
There it is.
And it blew people's minds. They're like, oh, I didn't think of it that way. I was like, yeah, that's why it's part of the reason why, you know, adoption isn't great, because there's some of these basics that mm-hmm. we don't understand. From your point, it's maintenance with just the equipment that applies it. Mm-hmm. They're doing all these things they could say, and it couldn't do it because they didn't maintain it. Or to my point, you're doing too much. It's too much just to get forward. And we've almost made it too complicated now, even though these tools have been around for the last 20 plus years,
25 years. Yeah.
And doing
And the thing to look at too, I mean, you look at, I think there's a place for the different levels of the technology, and let's stick with the imagery as the example. When I was at Southern States, you know, the drones were first coming out, and I mean, we had people calling us wanting to sell drones or do drone work for us, like nobody's mm-hmm. business. And we had some instances where the drone work really was useful, but we did it in specialty crops.
Yeah, 100%.
And there was reasons for it. And so we could address it based off of the need, not off of a solution searching for a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's so many out there. I mean, there's some great tools out there, but nobody's put a business model around it that everybody wins in the deal.
Yeah.
Because everybody has to win in this deal. Because mm-hmm. if there's not a return on investment by the end user, whether it's the retailer or whether it's the farmer, and everybody in between to the manufacturer, the vendor, whoever that might be, if everybody doesn't have the opportunity to make a business out of it, that's kind of where we are today. I mean, you and I were talking here a few weeks ago about the mergers and acquisitions that are taking place.
Oh, God.
And the craziness of that is.
That's chapter three here or whatever.
Exactly. But it's, okay, so what does that mean? If you've got a great product, why isn't there a great business model to go around it? Well, I mean, I look at where Almaquin was with SoilTech. We had an online backup.
Mm-hmm.
For SGIS software back in the mid-90s. But I had the dealers that I worked with, I'd hate to think how many of them, one of them told me point blank, if I have a phone line hooked up to my computer that I have SGIS on and their data, they'll quit. They don't want anything online.
Oh, yeah. We did imagery online early. Now, we weren't doing heavy data stuff. We had remote sense data, so it's like, well, it's kind of ours, but it's not yours. It's definitely not yours.
Yeah, but think about where we are today. If it ain't on the cloud, it ain't going to happen.
Oh no, that's that's one thing that's been nice. Of course, there's its own challenges with
absolutely.
That. I think we're getting around parts of it. There's I was telling someone at the show last week. I can't even remember what the product was, something with yield. Mm-hmm. And it was like, yeah, farmers can, or agronomists, whatever, can put the yield data or the yield number in, and then mm-hmm. it models this and this. I'm like, and they're trying to do it on, you know, tons and tons of acres. It's like, mm-hmm. so it's like, let me ask you a question. Do you think you're getting the accurate yield number? They're like, well, what do you mean? The you know, farmer's typing it in. I'm like, oh no, there's like 10 yield numbers in the farmer's head. And it's the one he wants people to know. It's the real one. And the real one sometimes isn't even the one he reports. Now, sometimes it is, like through crop insurance. Mm-hmm. But there's a crop insurance yield number. And then there's an agronomist yield number, ag retail yield number, and there's a bank yield number.
It's like the landlord.
There's a landlord yield number, and they're all, every single one of them, not all the time, but a lot of the time are different. Mm-hmm. As like, how can we model anything when those data sets are going to be disparate because of the input side of it? And even say you get yield data from a machine. Okay. This is another thing that I brought up. It's like, okay, we put so much faith in the data that's coming off a machine. Well, I've custom combined for people and worked and just filled in sitting in a combine for a friend. And even all the newer machines have kind of the yield monitor built in, and they see the number on the cab and they're like, oh, geez, this is getting, you know, 110 bushel wheat right here. Oh my God. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's just that area. We get it. And you want to take a little picture and send it to your friends. Like, fine.
Yep.
Like, yeah. And you're never going to send a picture of like, oh yeah, this is the shit area of 20 bushel wheat. Like,
you know, yeah.
Or exactly. 10. And so, okay, we get that. But even that 110 number probably isn't right, because then I'd ask them, do you calibrate any of your machines, and maybe multi machines? Oh no, we just, that number's probably good enough. I'm like, I mean, it might be okay, but you also farm 5 different crops, and wheat works different than barley, which was, we were harvesting, and then we get to canola next, and that's different. But that's the other problem in the mindset of a lot of farmers, that number is real to them.
Yeah.
And it changes their perceived number. And then when they use the grain scales, you know, if they do that, or their elevator tickets, you know, those are more of the real numbers, but those are the only numbers they keep. They don't necessarily report those.
No.
But yet we're basing decisions off these things.
Well, and you look at, and I still always laughed when I was at AGCO, and we'd talk about calibrating combines. And, you know, it wasn't just the yield sensors or the moisture sensors. They weren't calibrating the GPS receiver. They weren't doing the lead and lag of the processing of the combine.
They maybe have 30 feet in there instead of 20 feet for the.
Some didn't, had 5.
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay, what you're making decisions on your yield removal. So let's say you did have 350 bushel here in this spot. You're putting 350 bushel worth of product 30 feet that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even close.
Well, and there's still the argument, and I just saw this the other day. Someone was, I think it was in the Western Producer. So it was a, you know, Canadian article, and it's like, oh, we found that putting, and this has been an argument since day one. Do you put more product in higher yielding areas and less product in lower yielding areas, or do you put, or vice versa? At first there was, oh, put more fertilizer in bad areas so it produces better, and the put less in good so it, because it's already doing fine.
All the things, yep.
And yeah, it doesn't work usually, but the other way doesn't always work either. And there's still this fight over the basics of what even to do there. And then how we're calibrating things to all these points. And then what ends up happening, all these things are complicated in their own right to do, to get anyone to do them, even if they're a trained professional, time-wise, getting out all the farms, getting all the monitors, getting everything together. Mm-hmm. And then we've been sitting here a large amount of people the last 10 years with all these softwares and desks. It's like, oh, we can do this. We can change the world. And we're all like sitting back here that we've been doing this for so long, and be like, no, you can't do it. Like we want it too. We want it
so badly.
But you can't, because we haven't solved those simple things still.
Well, I'll give you another story. I had a situation where something happened to the machine. It something was wrong. So it wasn't just negligence, okay? But they were spreading lime. And the operator goes, man, I'm really glad it did it on the lime job rather than a fertilizer job. And I looked at him and I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, if I'd have done it on a fertilizer job, that would have really screwed up the field. And oh my gosh, you know, and he's just going on about how bad the fertilizer. And I'm like, I would have rather you have screwed it up on the fertilizer than the lime. Yeah. Because now, you know, the fertilizer is 1 year. The lime is 3, 4, 5 years, depending on the soil type.
And that messes your pH up like crazy.
Which then affects all of the other things, nutrients, everything. Yep. And I'm just like, let's get to the basics of things. And I think you talked about the all the brochures and everything of soil tech. Al lived on the barrel theory. Most limiting factor. Always had the broken barrel with the water in it.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that picture. And, you know, and it was okay, you know, and it had nutrients on it and everything. And it, you know, had the lowest one was like phosphorus. I'm just using that as an example. But if you fix pH, and pH isn't the most limiting factor, phosphorus is, nothing changes.
Yeah.
So what are we doing with the technology tools we have, let alone the work we should be putting into it, to identify the most limiting factor, addressing that one first? Because until we address that one, nothing else matters.
Well, and I think it's a crux of why adoption has been low in the ag tech space, because, you know, farmers get inundated with all this stuff. They have for years. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, let's say to the point, you know, with the spreaders, that one moment for that farm that got streaky fields, that sets them back 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It takes one moment to set them back. And because some of those basic things haven't been addressed, even from people trying it even lately, something is off and it sets them back. Mm-hmm. Years to some decades, some will say never doing it again, because guess what?
There it is.
I never had fields that looked like this my whole entire life. And I try to do one variable rate map on one field that I'm trying, because I'm trying to do all these good things that you tell and the university says and the extension, all this stuff. And I do one field and it all is messed up.
Yep.
Like, why the hell would I do this again? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what it is. And that's the problem, because we haven't still solved those basics.
Mm-hmm.
We just keep on bringing more complexity to it. And the top 5%, they've figured it out by now. And
I would even venture 10% now.
Yeah. And the retailers are like, yep, you don't mess it up with them. Get it right. Mm-hmm. But when it's someone new, because you don't have all the data, because they haven't been doing it, they haven't been playing with it, you don't know how they deal with variable rate and data, it's mm-hmm. starting over, and you make the slightest mistake, they're still just not coming in. So they don't even care to even market it to some of those people.
Well, and there's two schools that I've seen in this as well, to your point. One, We've screwed up at the ag technology market as an industry, as a whole, because we've overpromised and underdelivered so many times. We've gone out and we've sold, you know, grid sampling and variable rate, and I use that in the general terminology.
Zone forever.
Exactly.
The argument will never go away, though.
It'll never go away. But you have. You know, it was the silver bullet. We're gonna maximize your yields. Well, I don't necessarily want to maximize my yields. I want maximum economic yield. But it was the silver bullet. We were gonna fix everything. And then when that didn't do it in 1 to 2 years, then the next widget comes along, and we're gonna have the silver bullet that's gonna fix everything. And then the next silver bullet, and the next silver, and eventually everybody goes. And I always jokingly say, eventually we're all from Missouri. Show me.
Mm-hmm.
When you show me it'll do it, then come talk to me. Then we'll think about it. So there's that. And I think that's the majority of it. But another, I was talking to a young farmer, and he goes, "Dave, we're not into technology." He goes, "We have some of the basics, and they've got some things they have to record and have as applied, and some of those basics." But he goes, "We don't do technology." And I said, "Okay, why not?" And he goes, "Way back when, my dad went to one of those precision ag meetings. And he and a friend of his were sitting there and listening to it and, you know, taking it in and everything." Mm-hmm. He said, "Dad's buddy at the end of it leaned over and he goes, 'Man, you could get overwhelmed by this pretty easily.'" And he goes, "My dad came home and he goes, 'You're right. We could get overwhelmed by this pretty easily. So we're just not going to worry about it.'"
That's like half of everybody.
And to your point, the complexity and the layers of stuff,
mm-hmm.
all of the different technologies, all of the silver bullets have become so complex and so confusing that they're just like, "You know what? Just let me grow a crop of corn. Let me grow a crop of wheat, a crop of cotton."
Yeah.
Care.
Well, and we're even leading up to, it's been the push to out yield everything and out yield, and yields have gone up, and that's been great. Well, we have like a supply of everything right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on a lot of sides of ag. It's not just, you know, the normal commodity side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like the feed the world mantra has been, I think it's slowly turning to like, "Oh no, we can do that. That's not the problem." And I think others are seeing it's like, "Oh yeah, there's a shit ton of land in Africa and South America and everywhere, actually. There's mm-hmm. plenty of arable mm-hmm. land."
Yeah.
But in a sense, it's like, okay, maybe don't open that up, and maybe we can just kind of do better what we have and keep the status quo. But even to the points of to your story with that farmer, there's another end to it too, that I've almost been feeling this more. If I ever farmed again, like, God, I don't even know if I'd want to do all this crap, mm-hmm. because you start making these changes, unless you really start off good and really understand your base well, like your real base zones. 'Cause I'm a zone guy, so I'm not getting into grids, but your base areas are your fields, and you really understand your topography, your soil types, your just general how weather affects that. And if you do change the rates, and then you're still trying to see the results, and imagery, good point of this,
mm-hmm.
well, you're changing results. So then how you view how you change the results ends up changing how you future change the results. It kind of it stair steps on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And agronomically, I'd never hear anyone talking about it. Because it's mm-hmm. it just makes it, every stair step is more complex. Like, oh, mm-hmm. I put 110 pounds here. You know, for years there was 100 pounds on it every year. Mm-hmm. Oh, but here I only put 50. And now I see how that's affected it. Oh, God, is that right? Now I got to sit more time spending on that one zone in that one field because I've changed its normal trajectory. Mm-hmm. Or put a different variety on it now. Oh, that changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about all the varieties. Like, in some sense, I think a lot of guys are just like, the industry as a whole incrementally brings me up 3% every year. Everything's consistent how I grow it. That's about all I can handle. I'm like, and I don't fault them for that. I honestly can't. Well,
and what I look at too, in what I'm doing when I work with clients to evaluate things that they should be doing. And I was talking with a couple of guys, in fact, that they're seeing all of the things that are happening, all the things that are available, and they're interested in finding out about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, "Dave, how do I keep up? How do I keep up with this?" And I'm like, "Well, you have a business to run. Because don't forget, you know, they have a crop to grow. They have fields to scout. I mean, they work. They have to market it. What are they doing for their marketing? What are they doing for maintenance?" You know, we mm-hmm. talked about maintenance earlier. all of the things that a farming operation or a retail operation is doing for their day job.
Yeah.
And then we throw in the ag technology, and it's moving faster than I ever imagined it would. I mean, my gosh. That's what I do every day.
It's jumped from, this new thing or this new acquisition happens every so many years to there's a new one every month or week. Mm-hmm. There's a new biological every day.
last I heard was 1,200 companies. So,
well, if you listen to my last one with Kip Pendleton, he said it's like 2,700.
Oh, it's grown
worldwide.
Oh my gosh.
Worldwide.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The US, America. Yeah. North America was 1,200 was what I read.
And I think he was saying, I can't remember, it's in the transcript, I suppose, three a day or three a week. I think it was three a day right now. That's a lot. It's way too many things.
Oh, yeah. Well, and how much of it's duplication, and we all know that. But but here's the other thing that I think, and I don't know if it's so much in the biologicals as it has been in, say, the precision ag technology side of things.
Mm-hmm.
How much venture capital money comes into that and props some of that up?
Oh, yeah.
Think about the drones and going to the technology shows,
oh, God.
10 years ago, there was 10, 15, 20 drone companies at a, 75, 80 exhibitor show.
Yeah, I want to say InfoAg in 14 or 15, there was easily 20 out of 80.
Yeah.
And some of these were like, they were local shops. They're like, we're in Iowa or whatever. We'll just drive down for the day.
Well, there was one here in Indiana that the guy started his own drone company because he was allergic to corn. He's a farmer. So he needed to have a drone to scout his fields because he couldn't go into the fields.
Wild.
And so you have that type of thing, but you get all, and I made a bet with a guy that I worked with at the time. I said, all these drone companies, probably 14 or 15. I said, next year there will be a third fewer vendors here next year. And the next year it was the same number. And I stood there in one of the aisles just looking around going, what did I miss? Because I know what I can do and what I can't do. And those are one of the things I think I do pretty good of, here's where it's going to kind of go. Sure. And I'm like, how did I miss this? And then all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, the VC money's still there. They're propped up by the VC money. It's not a matter of, supply and demand. It's a matter of the VC money's there, propping them up, trying to make sure that they make it.
Yeah. And some of those are, there's still a few floating around and they've changed things up. I know there's a few though. I know what's unfortunate for them in a sense too, is they have so much writing, and this is a lot. I think a lot of the ag tech startups, it's not just drone groups. So I don't want to single them out, but
no,
they're all writing on they're running on gas on five contracts. Mm-hmm. Like it's starting to everything's going to reset here, which I've talked about. Maybe that's the next kind of chapter here. As we've talked about these basics that is just fundamental. It's causing problems. Let's just say that as a whole, it's causing problems. Yep. Here's some of those fundamental reasons why ag tech is not getting adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are just kind of out of control. They're human nature problems. They're throughout the board. There's nothing overnight that can solve any of them. Yep. It just doesn't exist. It's a slow time, slow grind.
Yep.
And then we have here all these businesses coming into it. And now there's been a lot the last 10 years, and you've been involved with some of them directly. I have. Mm-hmm. We've seen it from the inside and the outside and from in between. Mm-hmm. And now there's a lot of, I was at the conference last week, which was great and everything, but there was the tone has, I'd say some have started to lock down a little harder. Like, we cannot rely on investment, we actually have to sell our product, and which is good to see, because mm-hmm. that actually wasn't, it was kind of happening, but not enough.
Oh, no.
Not even near enough. The fear didn't set in right early on, because I grew up in our company, we never didn't get like some big investment thing. You know, it's not saying we didn't get a help here and there and things like that, but not like, oh, here's $10 million and go figure it out. Mm-hmm. I had it figured out, I feel, or I would have got to the point where I would have known exactly where to ask for the most money possible, which some did. Maybe they saw the writing on the wall and they're propped up, but they're like, oh, how did we get this much for it? Let's just try to go out in the night.
But here's the thing to go along with that. And I saw this even when I was in retail fertilizer. You live and die by the big deals.
Oh, yeah.
About it is you get the big account and you're like, yeah, I got it. I mean, every salesman wants to make that home run sale and just really knock it out of the park.
100%.
But when you lose that account for whatever reason,
yeah,
it's a big loss. And so a lot of these companies that get those big contracts, that props them up. And if they don't want, if they're propping them up, so you better do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then if at some point in time you don't do what they want, or, you know, something happens, a glitch, you know, a glitch on April 15th happens on a data management product, and you can't get the maps out to the field, and now you've lost that account. Now those multi-million dollar prop-ups are gone.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. There's ones that are close to that. And I know that feeling of losing, you know, that big thing that props you up. And then, yeah, you have to fight through instead of that one deal, they were like, oh, I got that. It's like, oh shit. Now I got to do like 50 of these things.
There it is.
And I got to call like not 10 people. I got to call like 200 people or whatever. And that's hard. That's just hard to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. Well, and you make the deals. I mean, my wife's an accountant and her favorite job is collections. And she and I talk on a very regular basis, even before I had my own business. And you hear this in a lot of the businesses on top of that. But when you have an account that doesn't pay, and all of the work that has to go into getting them to pay, if you ever But here's the thing to look at. You know, okay, let's say that was a $50,000. Getting another $50,000 deal doesn't take care of that one.
No.
I really need a $75,000 or a $100,000 deal to replace that.
Yeah.
To offset what I've lost.
Yeah. And there's the other opposite dirty secret that I and many others have dealt with, unfortunately, many times. The people that don't pay on time, who are the worst, are actually not like small companies. They're mega corporate companies.
Mm-hmm.
They're horrible. Mm-hmm. Just, and I think there's going to be some of that happening here in this kind of transition. Cause I actually know what's happening for some is that, you know, they might still have their big contract, but just getting that last check. New guy in accounting, new guy in. We messed up the PO. We messed up the whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're on holiday. Mm-hmm. And by the time where you thought you'd usually get your check, it's 6 months later. And you're like, I ran out of money 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that too. And sometimes it's, we're not going to pay because we're almost just kind of waiting for them to kind of die out so we don't have to pay.
There it is.
Oh, that's a fun one. Those are fun calls to have with people that can't do crap for you until you fight your way till it's like, get this damn thing paid.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's.
Yeah. And the navigation of that or the games that they play against that really get tiresome after a while. And that to me sours me from wanting that big deal.
Yeah, no, I you can get a check faster from a farmer or a small business. It's nothing. And all the tools these days, it's in seconds.
Yes.
But large organizations, they, you know,
want to play the game.
They have to play the game.
Yeah.
Cause they also have probably like 10 employees that's all they do. Uh-huh. And you know, anyways, that's a whole different subject in itself. It's just sour throughout the years. And I other people are sour. There, another colleague of mine was like, we waited 9 freaking months from the largest input provider in the world on a check. Mm-hmm. Multi-billion dollar company.
Mm-hmm.
9 months. And he's like, we barely had an operating note because we're a tech company. No one was going to give us an operating note for that.
Yeah.
And their VC run money was, or some of their investment money, which is okay. It wasn't enough to fill the gap.
Exactly.
And just those things. So to all those large corporates out there, maybe listening, just get your damn bills paid on time that you contract. You're hurting people too, but they are hurting people.
Yeah.
In that sense. And so that's my gripe. I'll throw at them because you've lived it. And I've worked with a corporate group and had to hear back that call. Hey, we made this deal and it was 70 grand. Like, do you know where it is? I'm like, dude, I went through my hoops to try to get you that deal. I have no idea. I will send an email. I will do what I can. So like, I get it from the other side too. It's just as frustrating for the internal people.
Oh,
sometimes too. So,
because your contact has no more control over it than you do.
No. 99% of the time someone has no idea what even is. They see numbers and line items and they're just going down the list.
Mm-hmm. And you're way down the list.
And you're way down the list. Yes. Cause payroll is top and then, I got to pay their insurance bill and then I got to pay the office and I got to pay the servers or whatever, you know?
Yep. All the stuff.
Anyways. But still to kind of maybe to some of these, you know, especially, the larger companies out there that have integrated all this technology too, you know, I've said this recently more as well is they're kind of good there right now. They don't care to bring in much more. Like it wasn't, 10 years ago it was like, hey, let's cycle through everybody. Find our core allies. Maybe we invest in them. Maybe we buy them. It's the only ones that are getting purchased right now is if they're basically on their deathbed and you can get them for cheap.
Pennies.
And I just talked to a main tech group guy earlier today and it was, we're here to sweep up.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want some of the core tech from it. Maybe we can do something with it. And some of the core people, it's like, but unless the company is just making real good money or is damn close to making real good money, that's the only way we're paying top dollar. And those, and I asked him, I was like, who is that? And he's like, I have no idea. I was like, on the top of my head, I don't know many either that are killing it. Some are cash flow positive. Some are doing make it a little bit or they're, you know, whatnot, but no one's killing it.
No.
In ag
tech. Oh, no. And I don't care what level it is, whether it is the old technology that's the basics or if it is carbon sequestration, carbon programming, any of that type of stuff. Nobody's making a killing off of it.
Well, and it's something I did on my, and I'll ask you this question. I'm curious on your thoughts on this. Maybe we're thinking of it wrong. Maybe we've been thinking about all of this wrong and how money comes in for technology and that. Because I look at other sectors, one that I've dealt with a lot, Earth observation. All the satellites in space right now are not paid by private industry. They are all paid through government contracts to solve larger problems, larger infrastructure problems. Whether that's from DOD, telecommunications, you name it, they are those are giant, large scale industry problems.
Yep.
Why don't we take that approach with ag technology and ag? Why don't we look at it as, and I know people in farming, and even though it's subsidized all to beat hell, are scared of government money in its own right. It's a weird, it's a really weird political thing. Yep. As we kind of mentioned yesterday, the whole farm bill thing is too, it's almost, it's too big for its own good because it does too many things too broadly. So you can't do these types of things. But that's one thing I've thought about to get adoption going is maybe, and I almost hate to say it, is the government has to treat it like an infrastructure problem. So it says, you know, we've talked about data standards. That's a huge reason why some of this stuff is not adopting. Where literally the USDA says, we have $500 million to spend out in contracts to solve this problem. Bid on it. Get it done. Just get it done. It is not worth it for us not to do it as a whole for the defense of our food and the infrastructure of our allies. It's not worth it. Like, I think that's probably the only way we really get adoption higher in some of this stuff. It's got to go away. It's got to go something like that. But what do you think?
Well, I'll say I would look at it in a modified mentality of that.
Sure.
I think, and I think it was you and I were talking yesterday on the call. When I was at Southern States, part of what I wanted to do, be able to do there was to create a service group that was able to stand on its own. We were going to do precision ag, and it was going to produce service revenue that could, if we needed it to, stand on its own. So it had it. I mean, eventually I thought it should have its own P&L.
Sure. The right way to do.
Well, you would hope that it would be.
Right way.
And I think, what I'm about to say, you have to do one or the other. You can't do it halfway. You either have to make it its own P&L and you have to make it pay for itself or it doesn't stand. Or you go to the other side of it. And where we eventually went to is, what are we really in business to do? And in this case, being a retail fertilizer company, our core business was to sell crop inputs.
100%.
How do we benefit our core business using the technology? And it doesn't matter whether it is a retailer, if it's a crop consultant, if it's a grain elevator, I don't care what it is, you know, a ranch, feedlot, I don't care. But what is the core business and how are we going to complement that business and help it get better at what it does? Because the example I always use of as companies got away from their core business is McDonald's. Years ago, McDonald's was going to become healthy. They were going to sell salads. They were going to be a healthy fast food restaurant. And they about went broke. Because what's McDonald's?
Not that.
It's a Big Mac, it's a quarter pounder, and it's the kids' meal.
It's a cheap burger and fries in some form or fashion.
Exactly.
Not anymore, though. I'll say that. It's insane, but yeah.
Well, but they went back to that.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we're going to have a salad so mom can have a salad when dad and the kids are going to have a burger. Because mom wants a salad. She doesn't want that burger. She does want to be healthy. I mean, I'm using that as an example. But okay. So, but they stayed, they got back to their core business and they strengthened back up again. So are we really looking at the ag technology business in the context of the business it's going to go into? Whether it's a fertilizer dealer or a consultant or whatever. And what is the position of the company? Not of, in my case, the manager of the precision ag business, because it really wasn't my decision to make at the end. But what does the company want it to be? What does the company need it to be? And at the end of the day, it's not to have the silver bullet. It is a tool to help them become better at what they do.
So with that, and I mean, and so my perspective is I 100%. No, that makes sense. And others have been doing that. I mean,
the ones that are good at it.
A prime example. FieldView has been that way, or Climate has been that way for Monsanto and, you know, now Bayer. It's kind of this integral tool to how to make sense of their main things that they sell. Mm-hmm. Even though they've directly from the product spent more money than anything, you know, we make fun of other startups and whatnot, you know, ones that all talked about before. Oh, they had this and this. It's like, well, yeah, they've billion and then 250 million a year for the last 10 years. You know, you add the numbers up, it's a lot.
It's expensive.
Then again, does it help their other side? Yes, because it clearly does. Of course, the counter argument to that is, and this is what sucks, is unless you kind of won that game early on the ag tech side, or you have that positioning from a software that has those core things that are working, say, within an ag retailer that also does the other things. You know, they're the ERP system, but they're also the work order system. They're also the somewhat data. Yeah, they're like 20 things in one. And those things are pretty sticky. And then, but then all these small groups have came in. And I can use imagery as a great example, because naturally people brought that in and we were kind of standalone in that. And then all of a sudden, from being us having one competitor, we have like 100 competitors overnight. Mm-hmm. And I get why people implemented it in. I get why people gave it away for free. And I get why FieldView for a while was free and others were free. Mm-hmm. It became this, well, it's part of our larger subset of business. And they'll put that cost into the bag of seed. They'll put it into charging more for spreading fertilizer or whatever, you name it. There's always an offset. They're always going to offset that cost. But then for the smaller groups, it's like, in the farmer's eyes, what that has done is then kind of, it's like destroyed the value prop of it. It's like, well, it's just part of what my seed company does for me. It's just part of what my ag retail company. But then it becomes, there's not as much focus on that. And getting back to what we were talking in the beginning is, because it's just part of it, you can lose your focus on making it work the way it needs to work so that it actually works. But maybe overall, through the last 30 years of this all, we've gone through these different segments of it. The latest was, let's bring it up and, you know, maybe try to get P&L, or maybe that's the next stage. I don't know. The early side was that let's get this going, make money off of it. And maybe the industry is just, it's set itself up. It's evolved to the point where, and that's almost to the point of what I was thinking on the government thing, is like the damage has been done to make it a P&L business in a lot of terms.
Could be.
It's maybe just too late because of what's happened in the last 10 years, because money and through acquisitions and really propped it up to say, to your point, for the ag retail, it's like, this is just part of it now. Mm-hmm. You just work with us.
And it's just table stakes.
Yeah.
If you don't have it, you're not in business.
Well, in a large ag retailer group, I know they said, you know, 1% of their income comes from their precision ag services, and they do it on 1.5 million acres.
Mm-hmm.
The rest comes from the other things, inputs and grain. Mm-hmm. And it's there to appease their top 5-10%, and that they're happy more or less with that. It'll slowly expand as needed, or it won't at all.
Well, it keeps those top 5-10% sticky to them.
Yeah. And
so here's a question to you then. I mean, there's a lot of new players in this. And some of it's, I'll call it retread. Some of the people have bought, you know, have started and sold and started and sold and started and sold multiple businesses.
Yeah.
And hey, props. That's big time.
Capitalism for you.
If you've got something worth buying and you can sell it, more power to you. But here's the question. At what point in time do some of these start looking back at what you and I and your dad and so many others have done and learn from history, or actually come to the people that know? Because I've worked for companies that start to go down a path and I'm like, we've been there before. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. And, you know, well, you know, and they didn't say it this way, but I'll be a lot more blunt about how it was, you know, what was really said. Well, you did it wrong. We're going to do it the right way this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't want to listen to experience and wisdom in how to bring the technology into an operation, how to bring technology into the industry, and put a business model behind it to what we were just talking about. So how do we get the industry to look at that and really take advantage of something like that?
Well, I guess the simplest answer is they pay people like me and you, Dave, to help them in our own little consulting endeavors, I guess. But that's too simple.
I would hope that's not going to happen.
Oh no! Yeah, I mean, we'll get our scraps here and there, and you know, we'll do what we can.
Yeah,
but I mean, that is part of the point of doing this podcast, is like, let's just at least get all the stories out from people being involved in it, from different layers of it, mm-hmm. from all sides, so that at least it's more open and known that these things have been known and they have existed. And a lot of the groups that are doing awesome things right now, it's not just because they just came out of nowhere. They maybe brought some people in that know their shit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, oh, I've dealt with it and now we're figuring it out, just because they might be new. And I think there are plenty of and this is what's really hard. And you've seen this on the ag retail space of people you deal with, is there's this such change and generational things happening in the next 10, 20 years across agriculture as a whole.
As a whole,
easily on every side of it.
Yep.
And there's a lot of people with a lot of wisdom, like you said. And now some of that wisdom is probably, it's not relevant as much anymore, but a lot of it is relevant. It's hard it's hard sometimes to figure out those what is and what isn't. I've been finding more and more. But even if what someone from the past has learned isn't as relevant today, the story of the understanding of how they got to their conclusion. And I've been trying to talk about this more and more is perspective. We just need more perspective in how all of these things work. Mm-hmm. To our earlier point, the booms. To mm-hmm. my point, just the number of the decimal for the rate that you put in for a control.
Yep.
The perspective of understanding why those things are hard. While those things are not as hard today, but they can be too.
Yep.
Because so much in the tech side, I've seen at least, is we've perceived too many problems in ag when actually, because adoption is the way it is, it's been more, no, we don't need those things. Mm-hmm. We are assuming we need certain things. And we need to have, I think, a little more perspective of why they weren't brought in early.
Mm-hmm.
And just talk through that and teach that to other younger people or whatever, people out of the industry that are new, whatever, even if they're older.
Yep.
To kind of talk through those different layers, because otherwise you're running in blind and you're going to have to learn from scratch. It's going to take you 10 times longer to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we just need to put our ears to the ground and listen a little more and be a little more curious on why, you know, the USDA put these latest precision ag adoption numbers out. Like, why are they still this way? instead of just saying, well, this company didn't sell this right, which sometimes is true, sometimes it's not, or why this, all these things, like there needs to be a little more curiosity, even from investors, from the government, from different agencies, universities, corporates. It was maybe too much to go through recently. Now they have to kind of hunker and listen.
Well, and I think I went to a meeting, and it's a consortium. Sure. And it was really interesting because I got invited to it. And other than a couple of the speakers, I was the only industry person there. And it was really rather interesting. And I didn't have to travel for it. I drove 15 miles to the Purdue farm to go to this meeting. So, 15 miles wasn't too bad of a commute for
it. Get out of the house.
Yeah. But everybody else was either academia or governmental agencies. And the biggest governmental agency that was there was the HSA, Homeland Security. And it was really interesting that they were actually, or at least seemed to actually want to listen to industry. I mean, in fact, to the point of, I had a couple of the agency people, they're like, I need to talk to you. And I'm thinking Homeland Security. Okay. What did I do wrong? First thought.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
But especially one, I mean, it was after the event was over and we sat there for probably an hour and a half after the event was over. And they're like, how do we get industry to help us? And it's one of those things where I don't know if it's a miscommunication or what the situation was, but I think that we've been at such odds to some of these things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That we have quit listening and we need to take a step back and start listening again, because whether it is within our industry or communicating outside our industry, it's a pet peeve of mine with the biologicals. We were talking about that earlier. When people start talking about, well, we need to start using the biologicals and reducing the use of synthetic fertilizers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where does potash come from? Exactly. And eventually they're like, well, they mine it out of the ground. I said, so what's synthetic about that? And they're like, and I'm like, I said, refer to it as commercial fertilizer, because that's really what it is. It's not synthetic though. Are there synthetics out? Absolutely. But don't call something that's truly organic a synthetic.
Yeah.
Because it comes out of the ground.
Well, and you could even say, here's the definition of synthetic: made by chemical synthesis, especially to imitate a natural product. Okay. Think of a natural product, the natural biologicals in a field currently as it sits without one other biological there. Chemical synthesis. How do you make some of these biological products? Through chemical synthesis. Mm-hmm. Isn't some of the biologicals inherently also synthetic then? They're synthetic to that field.
To that field, yes.
And so, no, to your point, I mean, it's all words and all this, it's all semantics.
Well, but it's being clear about the communication and making sure that we understand what each of that means. I mean, I talk about when I was at AGCO as well as at Southern States, we put together glossaries because I could say a word and have a meaning to it, and you could use the same word, and while it is in the same realm of what we're talking about, your thought of how what it is completely different. And
Well, that was always a thought when I worked at ProAg and my boss Dennis Daggett, it was all about definitions. It's like, if we don't standardize these definitions, I don't care all the tech stuff, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
You don't standardize that X means X, Y means Y, then none of the other standards actually matter. Because we don't know how to define them. Mm-hmm. And maybe that gets back to, you know, okay, so for Homeland Security, then I look at, and I brought this up on one of my little daily videos, my dog walk videos, the infrastructure of ag and data. And I look at single point failure. Look at the bridge in Baltimore, you know, mm-hmm. tragedy, accidental tragedy, you know, something failed on that boat and it steered into a bridge that had a single point failure. Now, are there ways to mitigate that through different piers and stuff? But didn't have that at the time. Clearly, it's probably going to become a national transportation law now to put in giant piers that'll never happen again.
Exactly.
We learn through our failures. It's, you know, mm-hmm. just nature. But I was trying to compare it to ag. You know, I worked with, you know, tell us about them with Ag Integrated. They're doing translation of all these data files through a majority of the softwares out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's groups even like, you know, Leaf coming in. Well, and some do it themselves. Mm-hmm. In a sense, those are core infrastructure pieces to the larger whole of it. And then even some of you could say how those pertain to other areas within what fertilizer is put where, what chemical is put where, what data is from the farm, what it means to this. Mm-hmm. And probably to the point of the, you know, Homeland Security is like, well, yeah, that infrastructure point gets hacked or changed. Markets can change. Distribution can change. Much like that bridge falling down is taking out a whole distribution point in the Northeast corridor of the country. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to, that's kind of to my point of maybe the government doing some of those larger scale things, maybe the standardization, these infrastructure pieces, not everything though. So I don't want people to get that, but
no,
that's, we need,
but does that give organizations like the Ag Equipment AEM and Ag Gateway, you got an equipment side and you got a data side. Mm-hmm. Isn't that where we ought to, as an industry, I'm not saying put all the focus, but isn't that where they're trying to standardize these types of things? So why don't we have, as an industry, even leave the government out of it? The industry should be looking and saying, this isn't just a consortium and a collaboration. This is where we ought to be going as an industry, and now we're going to adhere to it.
So I think there's a yes and no to that from my perspective, and it comes down to my experience in crop insurance, something that was ground into me, and I could see it directly. It's still not utilized to its full extent.
No.
And at last week I brought this up to someone too. So we're talking about adoption, you know, incentives for people to do this, you know, from the data standpoint, as an industry, yes, we should come together and do these standards. We should harden our infrastructure 100%. It should be done by us first. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time seeing it happen because of the competitive nature of it. You know how there should have been one. I mean, even Microsoft and Apple, the two like largest damn companies on earth, even decided, hey, we should probably work together. When has CNH and John Deere ever done that? And AGCO?
Well, look at the only reason, I mean, and I use this as an example, but you look at the latest announcement with Deere, Kinsey, and Ag Leader. Oh. Well, the only reason those three are working together is to take care of a lawsuit.
Yeah. Or I mean, plan for a, as we were talking yesterday, plan for a future, call it.
Exactly.
I wouldn't even call it a merger. You know, it's acquisition. Oh, well,
you will. As we said earlier, words, you know, they do mean something.
And that's the kind of the problem that I see with the industry doing it. I mean, we were kind of trying it from the Ag Gateway side, and I was a part of that. Others were, it's like, yeah, it was getting, like, people saw the need. That was good. Mm-hmm. It was a good first step. And then, mm-hmm. I don't know, crap got in the way and money kind of, they wanted a lot. People didn't have a lot. And then John Deere was like, well, here, we'll help get ADAPT done and all that. And then all the Agus stuff and all that other stuff was kind of going on and on from the input groups and whatnot. But I don't know. But industry, government doing it alone is really tough too, because you look at ISO, stuff like that, where there's, I mean, it's so in tied. And I was talking with a colleague about that, and the intentions are good, but the bureaucratic side is awful. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem you'd have if the government does it fully. I mean, we yep. see how bad it is. So maybe it's kind of the private public partnership. You know, you see what SpaceX is doing with NASA, stuff mm-hmm. like that, where it's like, okay, mm-hmm. yes, we're this larger body that says money is here, or there's this bigger thing we want. Money exists, but yeah, you got to kind of show that you can do it. You got to prove it. And then we'll trickle some little things to get yep. the wheel spinning. And that's helped hugely. And maybe I think it's that kind of how I see it, because that's how it works in crop insurance to a point. Mm-hmm. It's not the same, mm-hmm. but it is a public private partnership. And because they're, you know, the government says, you know, here's 65% to cover the risk, but you got to cover the rest and you got to manage it. Yeah. And it works on 95% of all acres in the country.
Yeah.
And you have agents sitting there, but they're also, so here's the difference to it, to me, to incentivize and help adoption in ag is we should, I think it's, there's a every area that needs to be incentivized by the government because they want it. But then there's this scare part is like, oh, the government's going to have all my data. There's these colliding right. things and oh, the government's going to do all this. Well, but private's not going to do it all either because it's trying to do other stuff. It's making money in yep. other places. It's not making money yep. in data stuff. And I think of on the crop insurance side, it's like, God, wouldn't it just, you can't just have a normal USDA program do this stuff. So here's $20 an acre, make a prescription file. Yeah. Tried it through Equip, doesn't work, we're the shit. It just doesn't.
It just doesn't.
It's like, but you need an intermediary. Well, by working in the crop insurance, there's a perfect person for it. And I'm holding a dangle because I'm just, anyways, it might be the crop insurance agent because they are bound by rules that govern them through the RMA that they can't share the grower's data and they can't do those things, even though they know more about the grower than probably anybody else.
Oh yeah. I'm
more sure. More than the banker, more, they know the risk. They know the real value. Mm-hmm. They know the numbers pretty close.
Yeah.
Or they know the number, the real number that they like, well, we'll put this number here. I'm not saying yeah. people do that, but
oh no.
Either way, but they're also, their mindset has been trained to be that way too, to be mm-hmm. stewards of the farmer's private data and secure it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also private. They're independent.
Yeah.
In their own right. Now, some of them are banks and all that too, which let's say there's infighting between independent agents and bank agents for sure. obvious reasons. Sure. But maybe that's the key. You give a discount for your insurance premium, but you got to do these things. You got to at least report via your GPS points.
Yeah.
But guess what? This guy's holding it. He's in charge. He is governed to not mess it up, but he's not going to send it everywhere either.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and I think to that point, you're talking about the data and ownership of the data and really control of the data is even more important than even ownership.
Yeah.
I think the other biggest fear in today's world, why we're not getting some adoption, at least at the grower level, is, and I think there's some truth to it as well as just some initial fear, is someone's making money off of my data except for me.
Yeah. And it can be to those other points. They might pay for the equipment to make it. They pay someone to probably turn it into something, but then they don't see the, no, it's still not providing value to them because it's hard yeah. to see ROI in mm-hmm. any of this stuff. But well, still their data, mm-hmm. but no one knows what to do with it too.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem. And the problem is a lot of times people don't understand there's data. And there's a lot of data.
There's tons.
But guess what? Data doesn't mean anything until it's processed and made into some kind of consumable information.
No. Most of it's worthless to most.
And I, the example I use, I was, when I was out east, I was out with one of the guys in the field, and we were at a farmer's place, and they were like, did you guys get the, get my yield information off of my monitor? And I looked at him and I said, no. He goes, I thought you were going to get my yield information off of my monitor. And I said, I got your yield data off of your yield monitor. I haven't, I don't have any information yet. He kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? I said, we have to process it to turn the data into usable information. Because right now it's just a bunch of numbers. It doesn't mean anything to you yet.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that. What are the questions we should be asking of the data? And what is the correct way to ask the questions of the data to get the information that we need?
Well, AI is going to solve it all, you know. AI is going
to
solve it.
Well, they keep saying that, but I was also talking to a friend of mine here. He's in a retailer. And he goes, yeah, I was watching some webinar on AI and everything. He goes, so I thought I'd try it out. And I forget what crop. Oh, it was sorghum. I wanted to know if I could apply this product to sorghum. Now, understand, the product is labeled for sorghum.
Mm-hmm.
And the AI said, no, it, you cannot use it on there. He goes, so I thought, well, let's try it. You know, he asked it a whole different way. And because he asked about active ingredient and parameters,
mm-hmm.
Give me a list of products that I can put on sorghum. And guess what? It was one of the products.
Yeah.
Then he asked back again, and you know, can I use this product on sorghum? No, you can't.
It's not learning. It's...
Exactly.
Because it's only using
as good as the data that goes in.
Yeah. And that's where I've been seeing that more and more, where my fear is away from it anytime soon, because no, there are, I think there's better versions of that that can do it a little bit. And if you train it right, and if you said to it, if you trained it in the back end and said, hey, look at it this way too, from the question point of view, because they're really asking, is that crop on the label? Like, that's also the same question.
But the question, and but the point of, I think, get I was wanting to get to is we have to know how to ask the question. So just what you said.
Yeah.
Is it on the label? And so now it has specific things to go look for. And so it really has to, you have to know how to ask the question to get the information that you need. And I think that's where we're failing as well in all of the data in crop production that we've gathered over the years or generated, is did we really even know what the question was?
I mean that's one thing with imagery over the years. There's been so many that says, well, the imagery says this. I was like, the imagery does one thing. Mm-hmm. It shows you where a difference is compared to another area.
Mm-hmm.
That is all it does.
Pretty much all.
But yeah, sure. If you get really, really close, can you count something? I'll give you that. If you can do that, that's a whole different kind of thing.
If you're going to use it.
Yeah, but a lot of the data is like, it's what is it? What's its real use? Maybe some of us are turning it into something that's really not meant for.
Yep.
Which, and that's where some of even the, I wonder if some of the AI ML stuff, I mean, some of it is, it's just an algorithm doing it faster than one human. It's just like, here's a million humans in a server. That's, to me, it's augmented intelligence is what my friend Craig Gansel, who deals with AI, has called it more than anybody in ag. It's like, it's not AI. It's just, it's augmenting ourselves at a higher number and a higher rate of speed. It's all it is.
Quicker search engine.
It's like, but it's not fully us. It's just not the full gamut of what we can do.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it can actually help. I think it can. I don't know. It's still, we're barely smart enough to figure out some of the agronomic problems we talked about earlier of where to put things and why to put things where, at what time and scale, for what data and what process. We barely know that ourselves. How can we train an AI to figure that out for us if we can't even figure it out yet? So we're still good old ag, and that's why farmers are like, you know what? Screw it. I know that if I put a seed in the ground, I put some fertilizer in there, and it rains a little bit, and I kill a few weeds, kill a few pests, I'm going to make money if I market my crop right too.
That's a big part of it as well. But at the end of the day, and that's the part of the struggle too, you get a lot of these guys that are like, you know what? I don't need all that stuff to grow a crop. I put it in the ground. I fertilize it. I protect it. I do all the things that I know I need to do. And guess what? I'm going to have a crop.
Yeah. And the crop is protected through things like crop insurance. Mm-hmm. If I market, if I make, what I've heard from a lot of farmers is, if I just spend more time learning how to market my crop better, that is literally anywhere from 25 to 50% of my revenue just doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And that there's multiple pieces to that.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. And weather is its own thing, but they can do that just by slowly learning normal conceptual things that you can learn online, or you can hire a guy for relatively cheap to help you on that. That's the problem with all the tech and the data is, like, it's a nice to have on a lot of cases of it. GPS has now become kind of I kind of need it, but the rest isn't that way yet, really.
Well, and you get to, let's look at our return on investment. And I think that's part of our adoption issue too. Our culture has become so microwave, instant results.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't care what data you're talking about. Data takes time and replications to see what, you know, to your point, the stair step.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time to figure out where that stairs leads to make a good decision. You know what? When we got steering, there was no question.
No.
There was no question to the value of that. I actually, when I was at AGCO, when all that was taking place, and I knew of a potato farmer that was meticulous enough, they knew the next year they were going to turn everything and it was going to have steering on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they went out and they planted a field and they counted the rows that they put in the field. The next year they had steering. And so they planted that field and they counted the number of rows they had in that field. And I forget how many rows of potatoes they added to that field because of the skip rows.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden their return on investment was immediate.
Oh yeah, that and overlaps and stuff like that. Simple,
absolutely
simple math, and that's the thing. Doing variable rate and things like that, and it's so hard to see the reality to it. And like I've told people, I know my dad is too, and it's like, let's just start and to our beginning point, and maybe then we'll close up because, well, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. I think it's five for you, and it's maybe it's Friday beer. Beer 30 or something.
But, and I got a big basketball game to watch tonight. So
yeah. Oh, I'll talk to you after we're done here, just quick. But
yeah.
So the simple things, and it's like, and I've told people this, like, how do you get into it? I know it's been my dad's thing forever. It's like, just make a simple map. Use the map in your head. You know. If you've been farming that ground for at least, let's just say a few years or 5 years, use some history from your parents from before, or grandparents, like, you know, these areas, just try something small. Like my grandpa used to cut different parts of the field out and mm-hmm. farmed them totally different. That was mm-hmm. an early form of arborate. Mm-hmm. He got a conservation award for it because then he put buffer strips in and he did this because mm-hmm. he knew where the water flowed and he knew it, mm-hmm. where it got in the way. That's how you had to do it. It's like, I think farmers just need to get into a little bit more of that mentality. We need to help them think of it that way instead of being so complicated. Be like, guys, just let's sit down. Let's maybe look at some data, but look at it and then draw me what you know about your field. Or just let's go through some things and tell me what makes sense to you. I don't want to add 100 different layers to it to make you this thing. It's like, let's just A, B, and C. Good, average, bad. What does good, average, bad mean to you for putting in amount population for your seed? Mm-hmm. And if they're like, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, 30, 34, 36,000. Not make or break.
Go.
Just try to do that during the season.
Yeah.
Just to see if you can do it. Because even if you don't, it's not the end of the world, but you'll get some confidence. And I've known others that have done this, and that's what's helped them. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's with an image, maybe it's with a set of yield data, maybe something else.
What it is, but it's something you can have confidence in. But I think we've forgotten that the farmers as a whole, the farmers that are out there are good at what they do.
Absolutely. They are.
These tools, and I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's imagery, soil samples, you know, sensors. I don't care what it is. They aren't to make bad farmers good because they won't.
No, it's some marketing likes to do that from time to time.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, but.
But at the end of the day, these are tools to help somebody become better at what they do. It's not leaps and bounds. It's incremental. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk about that, you know, drawing the picture. I mean, I always use growing up on the family farm. We had a bunch of small fields back in the 70s before it was get big or go home. Mm-hmm. You know, we had 20-acre fields, 30-acre fields, 10-acre fields. And Dad cut them up, kind of to your point.
Yeah.
You know what? They needed to be managed differently.
They do.
And so guess what? We now have the technology to manage those little fields in a big field efficiency. It's really all it is.
And maybe the problem has been, though, but since it's been combined, we don't see it.
And that's exactly it right there.
Because when you look, because seeing is believing in ag, and when you see a map on a computer and you think of farming, it's like, I don't want to deal with that. But if you see it when you're in the field, and I've seen it, I've done it. If you have a little mm-hmm. switch on the side where you can just lower it and up it, mm-hmm. people will actually do it. Mm-hmm. I think and some controllers used to be that way. They're not that way anymore. I think we need to get back to a little dial. Everything needs a dial on it.
Just speed and pressure isn't always a bad thing.
No.
But here's something that we were talking to a farmer when I was out east about automatic row shutoffs. And we didn't even sell them. We were just talking mm-hmm. to the guy about the advantages of, you know what? You ought to be looking at this because getting rid of that lattice work at the end of the field, I mean, all of that is just becomes weeds anyway because it's competing against itself.
Yeah.
And this old farmer looked at me and my boss was there with me. He goes, can't do that. Said, why not? He said, that's usually my best yielding part of the field. And it threw me for a second. I'm just like, how do I respond to this? And then all of a sudden I was like, well, you have a bigger problem. And he goes, what's that? And I said, if that is the best part of your field, your best yields, that means your populations aren't where they should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he kind of looked at me and he was like, what? And he was planting like 24,000. I said,
oh, geez.
Move it up to 28, maybe even 30. To your point, change it just a little bit.
Yeah.
What happens? Change it just a little bit. See what happens. It doesn't have to be wholesale change.
Yeah, well, what's unfortunate is changing a little bit in ag doesn't make the big investors and companies a lot of money really fast. So maybe that's our other That's another episode. We've already gone like an hour 40 here. So good Lord, I might have to separate this in two parts, but I'll probably just, I'll throw up as one. People can take some time, you know, Lord of the Rings is a long book. People still read it. You know,
exactly.
Sorry, I'm not going to, I shouldn't compare myself to that. But anyways, before we go, I guess Dave, for any people that want to find you, what's the best way to find you?
Well, give me a call, 765-701-0493. That's 765-701-0493, excuse me. Or email at dave.swain, S as in Sam, W-A-I-N as in Nancy, at visiontech, T-E-C-H, management, M-G-M-T.com. That's also my website, and I have a contact page there as well. So. Would love awesome. To talk with you if you need anything. Like I said, the buzzword of fractal, CTO-CIO, helping you find the technologies you need, but also helping you make use of the ones you already have.
Yeah. Well, and you also got a little podcast too, right?
Yes, sir. Vision Tech Perspectives. In fact, I just posted, I'm going to be posting one on Monday as well. We're going to release another episode. I do them about twice a month. And, Vision Tech Perspectives is on most of the platforms, so Spotify, Google, iHeart,
all those things. And it's yep. like, does it actually go out to all of them? I think yeah, it does.
It does. About the only two that you have to do separately are YouTube and Rumble, and they're out there too.
Yeah. Well, people can find you. If they can't, yep. I guess they can talk to me, and then I'll be say, here he is.
So there's, here, I got there's his, that too. You've got my phone number too, so.
Yeah. I'll solicit you to all the people that call me that I don't want. I was like, just talk to this number. This is my new cell phone number, Mr. Person from Nigeria that wants to sell me some sort of thing. I don't know. Sorry.
But the irony of that is this fall I'm going to Nigeria because that's where my son-in-law is from. So
that's right. Yeah. That's right. So win-win. That's
win-win. That's right.
Well, anyways, that's funny. Thanks for having you on, and a lot to cycle through, but I hope it gets some people thinking, and it should. That was kind of it's a little different than the other one. It's like, let's just talk about the core craziness, simple things, I think that's the overall message. Let's get back to kind of keeping it simple because. Yeah. We've made it too complicated and it's literally not working. So we need to keep it simple because the adoption rate's so low still. There's so much room for improvement. So
there is. Anyways, well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the time.
Yeah. Yeah. You too. And, that's the latest for this week's, Ag Uncensored podcast. And we'll see you later. Thanks everyone.